Yes, we thank everybody for coming up on April 2nd to our Bible study on People of Color in the Bible. We're using the book People of Color in the Bible, Volume 1, Establishing a Foundation. Last time we were together, we had gone through the introduction. This week, we're going to be starting on what we call the preface. So those who have books, they can follow along. And those that don't, you can be up on the internet and you can look at the ebook portion. Okay, we'll have someone to start reading our first paragraph for us.
There have been too many disturbing contradictions and inconsistencies I have witnessed in my short lifetime, over a half century, and they have led me to write this book series. The first was a situation at Martin Luther High School, a Lutheran Christian high school in Maspeth, Queens, New York. It was here I brought to the attention of the headmaster that the information he was sharing out of a book was outdated. He informed me sarcastically, in no uncertain terms, that since the information was outdated, I needed to write my own book. This challenge inspired me unconsciously to write this book series. It was not until 4 years after graduating from college with my master's degree that I authored and published Volume 1 of this series.
Oh, okay. Now, and I assume most of us who have gone to school, high school, some might have gone to Christian schools. And most of us were never taught of who were the real people of the Bible. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this was what I was addressing to the headmaster. And as he told me, no problem. You can start writing. So it was like a, you know, I mean that. And now today, even at some places where you go, if you mention about people of color in the Bible, it's like, well, if you think that's important, because they don't,
mm-hmm.
if you think that's important, then you need to, you know, deal with it. But from their perspective, it's not, we're not going to change anything because you think something's important.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first encounter with realizing that what they called Christianity and what we were taught
mm-hmm.
was not correlating with what the book was saying, the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure a lot of people, as they start to mature and as they start to develop, they run into the same thing.
Exactly.
But they don't know, some don't know how to research or how to find out, how do you find out who the real people were? And so
mm-hmm.
this was one of the reasons why I was writing the book, because I said, a matter of fact, one person had mentioned to me, who was part of my Bible study, he had mentioned, well, if I didn't know it and I wanted to know it, then there's obviously other people that's out there also.
True.
Otherwise,
true.
I wouldn't have even published the book, because I think I put it together. And I said, okay, good, I got this solved. And that's when he told me
mm-hmm.
that, yeah, I need to put it out there because other people are in the same boat. Okay, let's look at the next paragraph there.
Same professor? Is that the same headmaster that said you need to put it out there?
No, the headmaster, I'm not sure where he is. But
oh,
I did take it back to the school.
Okay.
And told them to use the book.
Oh.
I don't think they did, but I believe the videos and the books were at least put in the library.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, do you think... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. The same thing is at Oakwood College. At Oakwood College, they have my series, the adult children, and they have the video series.
Wow.
So that... people can, young people and different, because at the college, they have also elementary school, I believe, also
yes,
attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but I'm not sure if anyone is using any of the material, but
What year did you
there.
Put it in?
It was in the 90s.
Okay.
Now, Brother Emmanuel, do you think, though, that that most of the people who's not teaching this very relevant history, do you think it's intentional, or do you think that they are just as blind, really, as we were and had no understanding that the people of the Bible were of a different color class than they made it to be? Do you think it was intentional, or is this a conspiracy to keep this information covered up?
Well, I mean, when I mentioned it to the headmaster, and this is back in the 70s, it had to be in the 70s, yeah, because I was, yeah, in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
he didn't, you know, act like he didn't know. And when I brought it to the attention of one at, this is Pennsylvania, it was a Pennsylvania conference, one of the presidents, I believe it was Potomac, I had brought it to his attention and gave him the book. And we were discussing it because I said, I would like to present this at camp meeting. I'd like to, you know. And he looked at it and skimmed through it, and he said that if the people of the color, if the he had a master's degree from Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
So he had told me that if the people of the Bible were people of color, then they would have told him at Andrews.
You see what I mean? Hmm.
Now, he's running an entire conference.
Oh, I want to come
so
in. And depending on Andrews, tell them everything they need to know, eh?
Well, you're supposed, it should be. But
it should be, but we know theoretically.
Well, he was there, and he should have known of what they taught him and what they did not teach him.
Mm-hmm.
But my bottom line was that, and I asked him, well, what do you think the people of the Bible look like? He said, they look like me. A white boy from Ohio.
Hmm.
So that's been the image that has been portrayed, and so he bought into it. But the question wasn't, does he know or not know? That wasn't really the issue, because I gave him the book, and he had the evidence in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
So it had nothing to do with, you know, hey, this is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here it is. And his response was that, no, I'm not even going to investigate this. No, you're not presenting this to the people. Because, simply due to the fact that if this was true, I would have been told.
Mm.
Simple. So that's how people were keeping it from others. But I did know, this was in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a school there. So there was the first time they had black students there and international students, but this was the first time Blue Mountain Academy. That's it. Whew, had to remember.
Blue Mountain.
So there was one person that for the first time a black person was teaching there. And so when he was teaching there, I met him and we talked, and I mentioned to him, well, what are we going to do for Black History Month? I said, this will be perfect for Brigham. And so he challenged them to have a Black History Month. Now, this is, you know, this got to be the 80s, 80s or 90s. No, this had to be the 90s because the book was already published.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he said, yes, that would be good. But he said he would bring it up to them. Now, there was one person who was teaching world history was a white guy, older white man. And he said he knew, of course, that the people of the Bible were people of color. That's,
wow.
Hey, anybody who could read can see that. I mean, it's not like, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, I'd like
but
to
the, but the point, what he was trying to, so the black guy said, hey, during Black History Month, we would like to, present that. So he presented it to the, you know, the president at the school. He didn't, you know, have too much. Now, the parents were concerned, mostly white, you know, parents.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that I said, okay, this is what we'll do. We'll do it all day Sabbath. So I'll have Sabbath school. I'll have worship hour, and then I'll close with AY.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Wow.
So, yeah, because it takes a long time to cover it, you know, consistently and, you know, for people to get a benefit out of it.
Right.
So what we did was we started at Sabbath school, went well, and some of the teachers were there from the school and the parents. Now, this was the first time they've ever had Black History Month.
Mm-mm.
There was a black teacher there. But prior to that, there was no Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when we did Sabbath school, we didn't have too many people because, you know, everybody's not going to show up. The key was worship hour. Everybody had to hear me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That was the main speaker.
Right.
So when they heard it, then we said, okay, anybody who's interested in really understanding it more will come back for the AY.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people came back for the AY. Not the parents and all the mothers that didn't, and the teachers, they didn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
It was mainly students and the world history teacher, because he said he understood that. He knew that. So even after we presented it, one person, the teacher who had me, invited me who to speak, he had come back and he had made mention to me a week later or something like that, first he had me do a presentation to the class, his class. Then after that, then we took it and had it at the church. So what had happened was when we presented the first time to his class, he said that one of his students, a female, white female, she started going in crazy that night. She couldn't sleep. She started going, you know, wow. She's just going off. And we were trying to find out what had happened, and they said what this brother presented to school. And so basically what had happened was, because she was raised by Seventh-day Adventist, this was at Seventh-day Adventist Blue Mountain Academy, that's a school, because
mm-hmm.
she was there, what had happened was that whoever was her parents, that they had taught her that black people were beneath the shoes of white people's feet.
Mm-hmm.
We were lower than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she realized and understood that the people of the Bible were these people that she was taught and understood was under her shoes, then the question that was going on in her mind all night was, well, then what is she?
Nah.
Because that makes her lower than her shoe.
My goodness.
And so that was tripping her out.
Hmm?
She flipped out over that.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I mean, so I was like, excuse me? And that's what prompted that, hey, we need to understand what this brother presented.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment, Professor. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I'd like to address the question that Sister Willow raised.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, on the question of if it's deliberate or conspiracy, I find it's a mixed bag of tricks, but for the most part, it's deliberate because when we check Afro-Asiatic people, any professor, any scholar that go back to original sources, a combination of paintings, archaeological findings, and ethnic groups, it's very easy to stumble upon it, but then there's a wall of silence. That's where the conspiracy comes in. And then it has to be politically correct because the idea of imperialism or colonialism or dominant class, it is not unique to just Europeans. We had it with the Arabs. What a lot of people don't know, in Islam, what they say is Arab imperialism. And the Arabs were fighting against Israel for a long time. And I think the Europeans borrowed some of the racism and classism, because those two could be used interchangeably, against people of color. I think Europeans borrowed that from them, and I think also you can borrow some from India in the caste system. And so there is a level of conspiracy, a level of ignorance, a level of deliberate suppression of a history that is easy to find out. So it's a little bit of everything, and I think one has to be careful always to give a person a chance to be exposed to it.
Hey,
but at the same time don't assume, in a sense, because this is so easy to know. You know, it's so easy to know if you're a scholarly person. As a matter of fact, a lot of European Jews are finding a lot of things in Israel and in the various archaeological finds being suppressed. It's being hidden. If there are things that are locked up, we're digging to unearth some of these things and so on. So to my answer to your question is, I find in my research that part of European supremacy, or commonly called white supremacy or colonialism, part is deliberate, part is conspiracy, and part is ignorant. Some people have never really thought about that. They just bought it, the ideas of the Bible as it was sold to them. So I try not to be judgmental, but at the same time, I find that a lot of people have been in cahoots together, and wherever you have denominational religion, there's, you know, as you have denominational Adventism as opposed to those who are more theoretic and more interested in fellowship, then part of the status quo is to maintain this subtle supremacy where Europeans are the ones that are civilized, making everybody civilized and bringing the quote unquote gospel. So they wouldn't want to hear about that. So that's what I have found.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, as that your question will be deeply addressed as we finish this particular day with this section that we're going through. It addresses a lot of that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good. So anyway, when that guy got finished, when we finished that weekend, when we came back for the AY, the president came back. No, the president wasn't even there. That's right. The vice president came back of the school and the world history teacher. They were the only teachers that came back. And the when I finished, I asked the vice president, what did he think? He said, well, what he thinks is that we need to find out where we are from. Where are we in the Bible? Where are white people in the Bible?
Uh-huh.
Because it was very clear of who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, you know, yeah, I mean, y'all got enough books written on whatever y'all want to believe. But he said, yes, that's what we need to figure out. So it was, you know, so at least we know that we reached people and they were able to understand it and not from a point of harassment.
Mm-hmm.
It was just of a point from biblical scriptures and everything. Otherwise, the president and the world history teacher would have told me.
Mm-hmm.
So there were people who didn't know who obviously wanted to know, because the vice president said it clear as day. He needs to find out who we are, where they came from, because they're not the Bible people.
Right.
Yep, so it is, you know, like the brother said, you never know what the people are learning or where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what some of the matter of fact I spoke at also at what was that at I think it was Maryland no it wasn't College Park, Maryland. It was one of the other schools. I'm not sure which school it was, but it was a white university. Usually the white universities are the ones that invite me.
Mm-hmm.
Through their Black History Union or whatever, so from that perspective or from their church religious perspective. So I was invited there. I spoke, and the person who was running it, who was in charge of the entire ministry on campus, he was a white guy, and at the end, he said that everything that I presented was heresy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And one of the students who was there who heard him, a young white male, he had mentioned, he came up and said, well, I didn't know that the guy who was running this whole thing on campus was a racist. So he revealed his own self by speaking, you know, whatever's on his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, you know, so that people can see where he is, such that that student, that white student, realized that anything that's truth related to this, he's never going to hear, at least not from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was shocked. So you never know what's what is actually going on in people's minds and what actually happened. But what we'll find out is that everybody's been basically in America, I don't know about the rest of the world, but in America have been brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be going over some of that. That's the reason why we talk about propaganda and all of those things. Okay, let's start on that next paragraph there.
Okay. The next disturbing event was in my first few years of college, when my friend, cousin, and I, before we made decisions that would affect us for the rest of our lives, started to see life in a whole new way. We did not have jobs, were not committed to anything but going to college and figuring out what life was all about. Decisions take people down paths that they might not want to be on if they do not really consider all the ramifications associated with those decisions. Knowing this, we were brought to ask the same question that every generation asks at some time in their life. Even Pilate asked this question to Yeshua, "What is truth?" John 18:38. We were indoctrinated to believe that the American dream and motto was true, one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all. We concluded that we were not free, and neither were our parents. We assumed
all right,
that
let's
our...
Hold it, let's hold it right there. Let's hold it right there, right there. We just went through a whole bunch of stuff. Okay, what we were doing was we were in college, and we were just realizing some of the things that were going on.
Mm-hmm.
Or we really didn't realize everything that was going on. Basically, what we were seeing, we were asking some basic questions. We were asking, what's the difference between us today and when we was in slavery?
Mm-hmm.
And we concluded, nothing.
Mm.
Now, most people don't agree with that, but we can explain why that's what we saw, and that's the way we see it. And since we didn't have jobs, we didn't have something that, well, hey, we got to just conform to the society, man, and be done.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have anything that that we were committed to, because we were trying to figure out what life was about. We don't know what we're here for. We just go to school.
That's right.
And so at that time frame, you can make and form decisions that can help you to really appreciate and look at everything objectively. Now, once you have your job, once you're lined up and you're in this assembly line, then it's hard for you to accept or even want to look at where you find yourself and this society. So you couldn't make those decisions when you got older.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were seeing. We were seeing that even some of our parents could see it, but they couldn't do nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what, you know, and later on as you're reading there, you'll see that. My grandparents, who didn't even graduate from high school, could see all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But theirs, who, you know, was in college and all these other people couldn't hardly see it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the way we looked at this thing was we saw that if you was a slave, what did you have? Master made sure that you ate. Master made sure that you had a roof over your head. And master made sure you had a job.
Mm-hmm.
The basics of life. That's all master, and you know, you did. Now, the key was that having those three different things, and you were able to get around. So if you needed to get in the town, you used a donkey or whatever, you know. So then we started thinking, okay, what are we are today? Well, you know, you get a mortgage and you're in debt for 30 years.
Right.
So your entire life is tied up as a slave, or as the Bible puts it, you know, lender to the usury. If you're in usury, then you're
that's
a slave to the borrower. The borrower is
right.
A slave
mm-hmm.
to the lender, okay? So what we were looking at was, okay, so we really don't own the house. After 30 years is up, up to 30 years, you really do not own the house.
That's right.
The bank owns the house. But see, that's not what we're told. We keep saying or we keep believing we own this house. This is my house. No, it ain't your house. It's the master's house. So that was okay. So we came to that. Okay. Then the next thing was, well, we need a job to be able to pay off this 30-year mortgage. So now we have to get in the slave line to become a slave for someone else so that we can make them a profit, so that they can make sure that we have a home. And then we work every day, and we put food on our table. And if we get a car, some way to get around so that we can go to work for Master. And we're saying, well, what do we have? Nothing. The house isn't ours. It's Master's. The food is only the food if we grow it or if we buy it. But we get it from Master because we worked for Master. Master makes sure we got food on our table. Master makes sure we can get around in a car, whatever we need to do for him.
Mm-hmm.
And we have come to the conclusion, man, wait a minute. This is a scam.
Mm-hmm.
We go be slaves for the rest of our life. There's no difference between the field slave and the people of today.
That's right. Marcus Garvey was hollering it, and so was Malcolm X. Somehow or another, we missed, because of media, because of misinformation during those times, we missed the message and thought it was something that somebody wanted to do to cause riots, and we fed into the media rather than the message. That's what I'm trying to say. At that time when you were looking and seeing and hearing, those things were going on, and this very message was being given, but we didn't accept it. For whatever reason, the media, we believed in Martha's message better than we believed in our own message.
But you got to remember, there's a difference between miseducation and true education. The question is, even though we go to school, have we ever learned true education?
No.
Even though we go to church every week, do we learn true education, or are we just learning miseducation?
We're learning miseducation. We're learning the master's education, and we're learning the master's way of going to church. We're learning his way.
It's his story, isn't it?
Oh, my. Oh, yeah.
That's what it's called, his story. It's not our story.
That's right. That's right.
And he makes it very clear. He never said it was your story.
That's right.
So why are you upset? It's his story, and he keeps it his story.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, the stuff that's that obvious, we don't even get. Even though we said, yes, I know history. You do? Do you know his story, or do you know the real story?
Right.
But it's not like they're hiding that from us.
No.
The very words say it. It's just that we have to start seeing things that are before us where we've been blindfolded. We've just, been miseducated. The thing I think about is when Yeshua was coming through and John the Baptist was coming through. Now, most people remember, everybody remember who John the Baptist's parents was?
Yeah.
Okay, who were they?
Elizabeth and...
You said Elizabeth and?
I had it before you asked me.
Did someone help her? Did I hear somebody say something?
Mary to Mary. You said John the Baptist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mary.
That's the mom. Who's the dad?
I don't know.
Mercy today. Coming to me.
Zacharias.
Zacharias. Because he was... made death until he...
Okay, now what position did Zechariah hold?
Was he not priest?
He was a priest.
Okay, he was a priest.
Mm-hmm.
What was his job as a priest?
To serve in the temple. He had to do his course of duties, which they were assigned, I think, on a rotating basis.
Well, his particularly the one that they tell us about, because they don't tell us a lot. It just tells us one incident.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone remember the incident? Then from that incident, then you can tell what position he had. Otherwise, without that in the scriptures, you couldn't tell anything about Zacharias.
Well, he went into the most holy place.
He burnt the incense.
The incense, yeah, okay.
On the Day of Atonement. So that the priest can go in, the high priest can go in and stand before Yahweh and not be struck down.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a very important part. So when he went in to burn the incense, the Bible lets us know that an angel met him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And spoke with him and told him he was going to have a son. And his name would be John, and it goes through all of that. And him, like Abraham, didn't believe it because they were both old. Abraham was very old, and so was Zacharias.
Mm-hmm.
So was Mary, and so was Sarah. And so neither one of them believed, and so he said that he would be deaf, he would be not able to speak until the son comes forth. Now, knowing that his dad was a priest, what position was John the Baptist to have?
The priest as well.
The priesthood. Was he a priest?
Uh-huh.
He was trained as a priest?
No.
Under the Levitical priesthood?
No, he wasn't. Mm-mm. He went out into the wilderness. He chose not to be corrupted by the ruling faction.
It wasn't his choice. You think he chose that as a kid?
No, but obviously as he grew up, he recognized that he couldn't fulfill the role he felt he was being called to by being trained under those priests, so it was his choice to live in the wilderness.
Okay, but I'm saying before he becomes of age to make those decisions, he's still being trained. Now, the question was he trained for the priesthood? Like his dad. His dad had to be trained.
Then I would say he was trained as well. We didn't have a choice of that kind of thing before
Sure, you got a choice. Sure, you got choices of those things. If he was trained in the Levitical priesthood, if he was trained in there, he would have been disqualified to give the message through miseducation. That's what I'm getting us to see. As the system, that the counterfeit system of miseducation, as it is set up, it disqualifies us. That's why we can't see. That's why it takes us so long to see.
Let's go back, because I'm a little bit confused.
Okay.
I guess it's a matter of age or in my mind, but I'm thinking that they were trained from the knee. I mean, you know, from talking age. Mm-hmm. He had a choice? Are you saying that he did not choose that route from that point?
No, I'm saying he didn't even have a choice at that age. How could you choose at 2 years old,
like,
5 years old, 10 years old? You can't. It's up to who?
The parents.
Thank you. Zacharias and Elizabeth were told what? That he'll be a voice in the wilderness. It said that he would do what? Matter of fact, the Bible tells us. It tells Zacharias that he prepares the way for Yahweh.
That's true. That's true.
Right. So Zacharias was no fool. Zacharias knew what was going on in the priesthood. He knew what was going on in the schools. So he be under the direction of the angel.
Mm-hmm.
Kept him out so that he could do, because he knew he would be miseducated there.
Okay.
And so the same things with us. As we develop and as we grow and as we have children, we have to make sure we have two choices.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the catch is, well, first of all, before we even make those two choices, first the angel has to show it to us so that we can see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't see what's going on, then we just fall in line.
Now,
once we start to see what is going on, then we can make those choices for our children until they get to a certain age, and then they can decide on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to, but the same way with John the Baptist, the Bible makes that crystal clear. Who has their Bible with them? Need to read that in Luke, see what was actually going on there.
Luke what now?
Should be Luke chapter 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me see what I got here. Because that's, I didn't know if that was all
okay.
Something you had, you know, you guys knew. And since we didn't know, we just need to read it just so that we can all come up to speed on it. So everybody's on the same page.
Okay, where we want to start at the fifth verse?
All right. Go ahead. I'm not there yet. Just hold on
one second. We can.
1 second. Because there's another one we have that under the, let me see the time. Okay. Go back one, if you're on the internet, go back one back to the table of contents. What I would like you to do under chapter 1, now this is not in the book. This is only on the internet. I don't think it's in the book, but you can verify with me. It's on page 35. It's called The Fullness of Time. Can everyone get to that?
Okay, I'm going to have to sign back on because I was just using my book.
Okay, because it tells you where this happened with John.
What's the title?
The Fullness of Time.
Okay.
Okay, so if you click on The Fullness of Time, see, the key is everything that Yahweh has works on a time schedule. He has a calendar that events are transpiring by.
Right.
And because of that, okay, so we're going to deviate from where we were over to here, to the fullness of time. All right? Under the fullness of time, can we have someone start reading that? First of all, does everyone have it? That's the first key.
We're struggling.
Lola, do you have it?
No, I had to click back on because I had closed down the internet and was using my book.
Okay, no problem. Betty?
I don't, because I'm all the way away from my internet. I'm on, so I can stay hooked up and everything is right here. And I was using the book. It's short.
Okay, so you're not access to the internet.
Okay, right. I'm on the internet now. So where are we going? Where you want me to go?
We're going back to where we were in the table of contents.
Right.
Instead of us going to the preface, we're going to go
right.
In the table of contents under the first chapter, The Fullness of Time.
Yes, okay. Uh-huh.
Okay, if you click there, then
right.
You scroll down beyond the food that that John the Baptist and the boys were eating.
Okay, when the fullness of time was come, skip
mm-hmm.
down there.
Yes.
Mhm. And get down to John.
No. I want you to start from there. No. This
from
one.
From there. All
right. Right, right.
Then.
Because some of this stuff we covered, like I said, inside of the other thing. So inside of the homework, you'll be able to answer some of the homeworks now.
Okay. When the fullness of time was come, Yah sent forth his son, Galatians 4:4. We want to understand the time in which we live. We do not half understand it. We do not half take it in. The trials of the children of Israel and their attitude just before the first coming of Yeshua have been presented before me again and again to illustrate the position of the people of Yah in their experience before the second coming.
Now, let's hold it there for a second. Yep. Don't give those quotes.
Oh, don't give the quotes?
No, give the Bible quotes only.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about the fullness of time, when it is fully come, what does that mean to some, to you all? What does Galatians 4:4 mean to you?
That Father had already preordained a certain time for a thing to take place, and when that clock ticked down to that time in his prophecy or his estimation, then the event that he predicts comes to be. So fullness of time is when it meets Father's time schedule.
Now, do we have that calendar of events? So that when it comes, we're not taken by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it?
In the Bible.
Where?
Old Testament.
Where? No, there got to be.
There's
66 books. It's like.
Like all over.
No, it's in one place.
Well, I think that's referring to the book of Daniel because Yeshua himself said, time is fulfilled, the kingdom is God of the hand. So I think the fullness of time and the time, the kingdom of God of the hand is referring to the same reference of the book of Daniel that prophesied of the rise of Messiah, his ministry being cut off, and a lot of events taken away on Galilee.
Okay, yes, his ministry and all that was in there. Okay, good. There's okay. There's in particular, when we read or when we go through Yahweh's calendar. Now, does he have a calendar? That's the first thing.
Yes,
oh, yeah,
he
he's got a calendar.
Okay. Now, what is his calendar?
Well, his calendar is first and foremost the appointed time of the morning. That's one. That is the cyclic or annual season that we know. He always works with that season. And then we have what the nations would call linear, which is the prophetic event that gives us a benchmark so we said, and when you see, like for example, Yeshua says that if you see the fig blossoming, you know it is summer. So likewise, there are prophetic events that is spread out throughout time. We have some of them in the book of Daniel that occurred in and around Daniel's time, rise and fall of empires. So I would say that the calendar is both the appointed times that occur in a cyclic way annually, and then events that are spread out over the span of human history, much like how he marked them with the rise and fall of empires. That was an indication to Israel that the time of deliverance would come. So these two points that would be like massive time for us to understand.
I'm thinking of Genesis 1:14 as a calendar, and when he reestablished it in Exodus and Leviticus.
Okay, yes, he gave details in Leviticus. That is correct. Okay, we're going to start using this website. We're going to start using the power of this website. Okay. Click on charts to your left. Okay. So when you go to charts, I want you to scroll down. you'll see Hermetic charts, then you'll see Prophets and Kings charts, then you're going to see Last Day Event charts, the Gospel Verses, Revelation, Seal, Trumpets, and Vials. Then you're going to go to Daniel 12, verses, the seals, Revelation, Seals, Trumpets, and Vials. And then you're coming to the Sanctuary, verses, Revelation 7. Revelations, 7 Trumpets, and 7 Vials. I want you to click on that chart so you can see the details. Okay. In this chart, what we tried to do was put together Yahweh's calendar and try to map it into prophecy. And that's what I was talking about when the fullness of time was come. What you see, if you everybody has it, I assume, is able to get to it. Good thing we, so I guess each week, I guess you should always have your computer because we deviate out of the book into some of these other other things that are useful for us that was built around this whole thing.
Okay, when you said this is that, when I went back to the book, do I see a link that says chart?
Yes, the link charts on your left where it says charts.
Okay.
And then when you scroll down in the charts, one of the last ones that you'll see is Sanctuary versus Revelations, 7 Trumpets, and 7 Vials. Everyone get a chance to see that?
Yes.
Revelation 3, Trumpets, and Vials chart.
The Sanctuary. It should be the last one, if I'm correct. It should be one of the last.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Revelation 3, Revelation 7, Trumpets, 7 Vials, and Vials chart.
Okay, do you see the Sanctuary versus Revelations, 7 Trumpets, and 7 Vials chart? Okay, good. So now if you click on it, it's going to open it up so you can see details.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so we have here the first part that you should see, should say the creation story.
Mm-hmm.
Now as we go through the creation story also shows 7 millenniums.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we have the 7 days, and then the cycle starts over. And the same thing, he uses 7 of each cycle. So you have 7 years, and each year will be called the sabbatical. And when you have the seventh year, it will be called, the seventh year will be a sabbatical. So what's supposed to happen is that you're supposed to let the land rest that year. Then he uses the 7-7 cycle. So to let us know that he still uses 7. He does not use, in America, we use 10. It's binary. If the computer, no, not binary, sorry.
Decimal,
that's correct. Decimal for 10. When we use the computer uses 1s and 0s, binary. And it also uses hex, which is 16. So they have different things that are communicating on different mathematical levels. Now, here he uses, when we talk about the, let's talk about Pentecost. When he talks about Pentecost, he says that after the Passover, he makes mention that then we'll have the sheaf, the wheat, the wave sheaf will be waved.
Uh-huh.
Then once the wave sheaf is waved, then you count 7 Sabbaths.
7 Sabbaths.
Okay, so then when you count 7 times 7, that gives you 49.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one, which the next day would be the 50th one, is what we call Pentecost. Now, he took it from the physical realm, just as he took the 7 day to the 7 years, to the seven sabbatical, he took the Pentecost and made it and paralleled it with the Jubilee, such that with the Jubilee, you have seven sabbaticals. You have 7 years of seven,
mm-hmm.
which gives you 49 years instead of 49 days. And then the following year would be what they call the Jubilee, when all your debt was forgiven and people returned back to their lands and all of those type of things. So he's very specific in what he's laying out, such that as he laid out, he didn't lay out 8 days, he didn't lay out 3 days, he laid out 7 days for his creation.
Mm-hmm.
In that parallel, we will find that we'll have a parallel with seven millenniums, just as we had 7 days, 7 years, and then we have seven millenniums, 1,000 years, such that that's why Yeshua makes mention in the book of Revelation that we will live and reign with the Messiah for 1,000 years.
1,000 years.
That
uh-huh.
will be the sabbatical millennium.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so these are how he's very, very specific. So in here, the creation story, in the creation story, he outlines to us last day events and everything. He outlines his first coming. Everything. It's you know, and so we're going to go through this before we pause, because we're around 45 minutes in, and we'll come back 15 minutes. Okay, right here under creation story, if you go across, it talks about the days of the week, and as you see at the top, day one, day two, day three, and then day four is out there. It's further on the screen, but we'll come back to look at that. And then it talks about the description of type or symbol. Okay, and this one deals with before creation, and the first day starts off. That's what we have. Then we give you the scripture reference, which is Genesis chapter 1 and 2 with the creation. And then we talk about the time frame. Okay, now we're talking about the time frame before creation we don't know anything about, at least what we remember. We don't, it doesn't go into much detail on that. But now it we have the first millennium, second millennium, and third millennium. So if you see that each day it parallels, if you go up vertically, you will see on the first day is the first millennium, second day, second millennium, third day, third millennium. Everyone see that? And its correlations? Okay, then we have, before we had type, and now we have anti-type meets type, when the two actually come together, the symbol of what the pattern was or what it was supposed to represent, it actually meets with the actual physical event, such that they, when the fullness of time for that event occurs. That's from that scripture, Galatians 4:4. Then we have a scripture, which is the anti-type, before creation, the Messiah was laid aside as the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Revelation chapter 13, verse 8. So Revelation 13, 8, it tells us that the lamb was laid aside from the foundation of the world. Now, when we look at Passover, we know that the Passover lamb is laid aside. Most people don't know, but it was laid aside 4 days prior on the 10th day of the first month
mm-hmm.
to be offered on the fourth day, the 14th day, 4 days later, the 14th day of the first month. Now, if he was laid aside from the foundation of the world, if we count 4 days, that's where we have the four-day creation up there, and we count four millenniums, okay, and we start off with the millennium, starting off with around 4000 BC of when the fall of man occurred. As we move on in time, when we go to 4,000 years, where would that put us? 1000 would be from 4000 BC to from 4000 BC to 3000 BC would be 1 millennium. Everybody follow that? We're counting back in time. When we go from 3000 BC to 2000 BC, that's your second millennium. When you go from your 2000 millennium down to 1000 BC, that's your third millennium. So this is where we're at, the third day, paralleling the third millennium. Now, when we get to 1000 BC to around what we call today 0 AD and 0 BC, that's when we say that the Messiah came on this, on the plan of action. Did he come on time? Yes, on the fourth day, so that the land that was laid aside 4 days prior was now to be offered up under the fourth day, as it's as on the 14th day of the first month, according to the Passover lamb being offered.
Interesting.
Yes. Then as we move forward in time and we go from 0 BC to 1000 AD, because now we move from BC to AD now, we have our day, our fifth, our fourth day, as we were mentioning. Then the fifth day would start at 1000 to 2000. Okay, because if you count back in time, we should have carried, there's 4,000 years in B.C., and we've been 2,000 years because we're around 2011. Right, so we had 2,000 on the other side. So around 6,000 years have expired, passed. Would be the
totally
sixth, right around 6,000 years. Six days would have passed, would have from the time that we started the fall up until this time, up until the time where we are now, around 2011, 2010 time frame.
So you're saying we're out of the sixth day already?
No, we're entering in this time frame. 6,000 years have expired. That's what we just counted. 4,000 before, right? Because it starts off at 4 BC. And we're at what time now? 2,000.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
2,000
so
plus 4,000 equals 6,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? There's your six millenniums. Now, the perfecting of Yahweh's people would occur on the day that he perfected or brought into existence his perfect people. Adam and Eve. He brought them into existence on which day? The first day?
First day.
No.
Sixth day.
Okay. Such that during the sixth millennium, this is when the 144,000 would be perfected. A mirror image, because they will reflect him, just as when Adam and Eve were created, they were created in his what?
Image.
There you go. The 144 will be perfected to reflect his what? The Father's name written in their what?
Foreheads.
That's that they reflect him and not themselves.
Now, this is very interesting here now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. All of this calendar, when we talked about that Galatians 4:4, that's a very powerful text.
Yes, indeed.
It is not just a simple little thing.
Uh-huh.
It is a very powerful text. It is the one that guides us, that lets us know that there is a time calendar that he's using. And I was just showing you this time calendar such that during the seventh millennium, that will be, and that's why we talked about the seventh day, seventh month we have, because that's when we have the Day of Atonement and all those things, the seventh year. Then we had seven sabbaticals. And we talked about seven Sabbaths, which came to Pentecost, and then the other one came to Jubilee. And now we have seven millenniums. so that we can move into the Sabbath millennium. The
sabbatical. Now make that correlation again for me. You say when they were perfected on the
sixth day or during the sixth millennium. What we're in, okay, that's when he created Adam and Eve perfect. Okay, so during the sixth millennium, is that's when he will bring forth his 144 perfected people to re-reflect what Adam and Eve did.
Ooh-wee.
Yes, that's all I was trying to say.
So in essence, we're in that period of time now where the 144 is being perfected. And now, are we saying that it's going to take this whole
No, because you can't live 1,000. Okay, we don't live 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it would have to be, because the 144 are perfected, and then we know that during this, the Bible lets us know that we will live and reign with Christ for how long?
1,000 years.
So that would be the Sabbath millennium. That's the last one that's on the chart, as you see there, 1,000 years. That's the 1,000 years of sabbatical reign.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to that, which is the time that we're in now, is the perfecting of the 144.
Wow, that's good
for
stuff.
That particular time frame. Yes, yeah, so he has a perfect calendar,
mm-hmm.
And so that was just one. So when we cover last day events, we cover a lot of different things.
Oh yes, we
and
must
that's
talk
one of,
after sundown then. Oh
so
yeah.
So this chart here. Is when you read the other syllabuses, it talks about you need these type of charts so that you can follow and mark them up and put your own comments on it. Because to me, it's in my mind, but you're going to have to mark up your calendar so that your comments and so forth can be on there. So that as you're studying it and so forth, it can make a little more sense and clarity.
Oh, that was good.
All right. Well, let's take a 15-minute break and come back.
Okay.
All right. Thank everybody for coming back. We'll be picking up here with the preface.
We assume that our grandparents and parents did not see what we saw because they did not discuss these things with us in great detail. Mm-hmm. We were incorrect. Both our grandparents and parents saw the contradiction and inconsistencies. They dealt with it differently than our generation. Both my grandparents and parents instilled in each generation not to be ignorant, but to see the value of getting wisdom, knowledge, and understanding as the Bible clearly lays it out. They emphasized that people could take everything from you except your knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
They taught that we could only be free through true education. My grandfather had only a fourth grade education. My grandmother had an eighth grade education. My mother graduated from high school and went on to earn a LPN degree, while my father joined the Army at 17 years old and did not graduate from high school. They could see what took me and my generation years in college to see. What did we all see? We all saw that we were still in some form of mental slavery and illusion. No matter how much the propagandists fed us the American dream, after the economic crash of October 9, 2008, on the Day of Atonement, we can see that this American dream is only a dream. Speak to your grandparents and parents to understand what they saw in their lifetime. You might be surprised.
Amen.
Amen. Yep.
Yep. So I guess we can all see this is nothing but a dream we're in.
An illusion, not the reality.
Yep.
A form of mental slavery. So, see, that's why we can't stay believing the American dream. That's to keep you here. One day you will arrive. Well, if you don't, your children will. Just stay in the dream.
Now, Emmanuel, do you think, based on what we are talking about and the prophetic timetable of when these events are going to conclude and we'll be into the next era, do you foresee that happening soon, or are we in 40 more years of wondering? Because if that's the case, I won't be alive.
Well, most of this stuff we will be going through.
Mm-hmm.
That is for sure. I'm not going to be able to explain it today, but like I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned it, the third seal, that's where we are. And and the third seal has to deal with a worldwide depression.
Mm-hmm.
When the worldwide depression ends, then we will move into the fourth seal, which is a combination of hunger,
famine,
mm-hmm. pestilence, disease,
mm-hmm.
and 20% of the population will die.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move into the fifth seal, which when the persecution, which is what they were really talking about. When the persecution rises. Right. And so that's why at that point he will make sure that we're in a specific place to be able to do certain things.
I've always seen that being a possibility, that we, while when the no buy, no sell lock goes into effect, it really won't affect the people of Yah as much. Now, we'll feel the pinch, but we still will, same as he say, pray for your daily bread, and he sustains us, pestilence and earthquakes on divers sides, and none of those things will come near you. I believe those promises. So I've always felt secure that Father would provide and protect, but I just wanted to be in the right place, because it's not like we can just sit still with hands folded and say, okay, he's going to take care of me, and you don't do anything he has outlined for us to do. Sure, he can provide you food. He can make trees into food, but he has told you what to do so you can grow that food. So he's not going to provide for you something you could have done and should do for yourself.
Let me give you a good example.
Uh-huh.
During the Great Depression,
uh-huh.
I had a guy who owned this orchard. Older gentleman, white guy, and he and his family, they lived in the country. They had their own apple trees. They grew their own food. They had their own nut trees. They had their own fruit trees, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad would go into town each day and bring apples and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Great Depression hit, for 1 week, his dad couldn't sell anything.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad asked him, how come I can't sell anything? And he said, didn't you know the banks crashed?
Mm-hmm.
So it did not affect him and his family.
Hmm.
And he was doing what he was supposed to do.
That's all we can do. Mm-hmm.
Right, but the key is it didn't affect him, and he was in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because he was living
then,
sustainably, because he was mm-hmm. living sustainably, it didn't mm-hmm. matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is suffering that was in the cities and standing in bread lines and all the rest of that. And he, for a whole week, did not even know.
That there was
no
a depression.
That he had no clue.
Sound mm-hmm. good to me.
Now, that's the way we're supposed to be. See,
uh-huh.
See, that's the way he wants it to be.
Exactly.
I see it.
I don't
that's
have to
that,
do
that
anymore.
Disconnected, yeah. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he wasn't living off of that, but the bottom line was that's what he had. He was self-sufficient, and that's where Africa and the African diaspora, they have all of those things already. That's how people are surviving.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's another portion to be added to help everyone see what is going on. But the
mm-hmm.
bottom line is that happened in 1929.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even feel it. Nor his children, nobody. But everyone else that was depending on the beast felt it. They lost all their money in the bank, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
so
he didn't have none in.
He didn't have none. Didn't really even want
because he didn't know what happened.
Didn't even know what was going on.
No way, for a whole week. And that's the way it's supposed to shake us. It's supposed to be like, yeah, what are you talking about? I mean, if you were separated from the world, anything happened in the world, so what? That ain't got nothing to do with me.
You ain't got right. Mm-hmm.
I'm separated from you. I ain't got. I'm not tied to you by so much as a threat.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm
yes.
loving that.
And this is what sustainability systems is all about. Totally
Can
off the grid, off the people, off everything.
Can that be done here in America?
I don't see it working. In my paper, I mentioned that
mm-hmm.
it's contradictory to capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
The two
mm-hmm.
cannot work together. Capitalism is to keep you a slave
mm-hmm.
and dependent
mm.
and to become ripped off or get ripped off. You got to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
That's what capitalism is all about.
The strong survive.
Where,
yeah.
where the other way... The African and the Aborigine people around the world, they all lived as communities and everyone shared. So it was never that mentality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's why they were able to live sustainably without polluting and killing and so forth. Just imagine, we've been around for 6,000 years. Just imagine if they would have started polluting like we're polluting 6,000 years ago.
Oh, the planet would have been destroyed by now.
Thank you.
Totally
so these
destroyed.
People were totally sustaining for 6,000 years Yahweh's way. We
mm.
Europeans have come around for the last 50 years and has undone everything.
I mean.
So
and
that's
enough.
It.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Right. So I'm just saying that's it. So that's what we have to determine. I think in my paper I asked that question. I mean, if the question is asked that we have, you know, we have not been stewards of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Through greed and hunger and so forth. No, we're just undoing everything that Yahweh has planned for us to be.
And in other countries, and I know Africa, that's what I've been told, is that they once you pay for land, that's it. In America, you never get finished paying for it. You finish with the mortgage, you start with the tax. I mean, you continue
mm-hmm.
to pay tax. On the land that you've already purchased.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's non-sustainable. Yes, that's what the system is. And as we can see, even people who are old, you know, people fourth grade, like my grandfather, they can see through this stuff.
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, that's why they can see through it easier. Because once we get wrapped up in the educational system of miseducation, we get lost in that. See, we're more like Zechariah, who took his son out of the system, we actually put our children in the system. For those who did. So
yes, if you know what you're doing. Okay, you should know science that helps you learn about Yahweh. You should learn through history. There's certain things you should learn, and there's certain things you shouldn't learn.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we homeschooled our kids, so we can make
mm-hmm.
sure they learned what
mm-hmm.
they need to learn.
The more we looked at that verse that you said about the heavens declare, the more
mm-hmm.
it sends us back to science.
There we go.
And math.
That's it. And now ask the question, what is America kids flunking in?
Science,
math,
and
science.
Sister, the exact things that you need to be what?
Self-sustaining.
There you go. They see. They got us under lockdown, and you think you're in a system that is helping you when it is crippling you. To make sure you can never go free. But
and you,
don't forget.
And you mean they plan? If somebody could really have the mind and the wherewithal to think and plan this far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called the American Dream. One day you'll wake up and be surprised of where you've been sleeping. Okay, let's get to next one, because Matthew 24:13 talks to us.
Let me read the next one. Mm-hmm. While we were dead asleep, according to Matthew 25:13, we were not conscious to the truth in reality. We were fed fragrant deception in almost every aspect of life. About this time, someone might be saying,
This cannot be true because we have put in position. Wait a minute. About this time, someone might be saying this cannot be true because we have watchdogs, we have put in position of trust our leaders, politicians, pastors, and teachers are paid through our taxes and tithes. They are hired to look out for all our interests and not the rich and the famous. They would have told us if these things were true. Hopefully now every generation can see that our leaders do not care about we the people.
Mm.
Their economic bailout of $700 billion is for the rich and the famous. Wall Street, bankers, car companies like Ford and et cetera.
Amen. So that's where we find ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Once we wake up from the sleep of Matthew, remember that in Matthew 25.
Right. The virgins, they all slept.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Most people tell you only the five foolish slept.
Oh, no, everybody slept.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's right. All ten slept. That's right. Everybody found themselves asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the big question.
Mm-hmm.
How did they wake up?
Mm-hmm. Behold the bridegroom coming.
That was the voice that said, behold the bridegroom cometh.
Mm-hmm.
Go. What? Come
Go
out of her.
Go ye out to meet him.
Come out of her. Go ye out to meet him. That's
Go
the call.
Out to meet him.
There you go.
Boy.
Now, the question is always asked, if the ten virgins are the believers, then who wakes up the believers?
Mm.
The forerunner.
It's not Yeshua. It's not the bridegroom.
No, it's not him, because whoever's doing that announcing,
that's right,
the announcer, whoever that person is telling everybody to wake up. And
so that's another, there's another group that is out there that no one knows about that will come forth to do a work. Those
that
are walking in all the light. Yep, yep, that's in the Bible. Yep. That's Matthew 25. That's
I'm trying to think. Now, when you ask the questions like that, see, you don't quite, because you don't keep this always on your forebrain.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it that woke them up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Yep. So that's why we mentioned those verses there. We said according that we were not conscious of truth and reality. Now, when you're sleeping, what happens when you're asleep?
You're dead to the world.
So what about if someone's in your house robbing you? That means you're still asleep. You're unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Totally unconscious to what? Reality.
Danger and everything else.
No, reality.
Reality. Mm-hmm.
See, that's the key. That's what I was trying to... That's what that little... See, every one of my lines is saying a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we are unconscious. We are not conscious to the surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what is everything that's going on around you, we have no clue. And in reality, when we think about what we're talking about, we have no clue of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
of what's been going on, and
mm-hmm.
how we've been deceived. We have no clue. We have been totally made unconscious to reality every second of the day.
Hmm.
As
now, who wakes
made,
us up?
Well, that's another group. I'll talk about that a little later.
Okay.
But as we can see that as we were sleeping, They were feeding us fragrant things that are obviously, it can't be true.
Mm-hmm.
In every aspect of our life, from what we eat, what we drink, what we think, our religion, our last day events, everything. Flagrant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not hidden. It's flagrant. In every aspect of our life.
But because we've been asleep and we're unconscious, we just drink it up and don't question it.
And most people, how dare you say I was unconscious?
Mm.
That's an insult to my intelligence.
Yeah.
I said, hey, I'm saying, hey, if you not know what's going on, and then you depend on these watchdogs, they ain't doing nothing. The Bible says dogs that do not bark.
Dumb dogs, it calls them.
There you go. That's right. They do not bark. They're not going to tell you. Watchmen on the wall of Zion, they're not going to blow no trumpet.
But Emmanuel, see, not my position on that always is, yes, there might be some, but some are just as real in unconscious sleep as we are and were, and they truly don't know that they are, so they're doing what they think is the best they can do. They're supposed to be watchmen, but they can't watch because they've been lulled into sleep as well.
I don't doubt it. But if that means you not, you know, you got when you read Ezekiel 13, I think, and 33. When you read them, it says that he has called watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's
so
watchmen.
So don't claim to be a watchman if you're
No. There's watchmen that you set on the wall. That's what he says.
Yeah.
Pick out your watchmen, and that's what they did. They're your watchmen, and they're the dumb dogs. But they can't hear, and they says that then he has set up watchmen so that they can hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
The others can't blow a trumpet or say anything because they don't hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the key falls. And that's what he says, I've made thee a watchman on the wall so that at my hearing that they might be able to hear. They might be able to do what I've said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's where the key is. But if everybody's asleep, you can't see it. Okay, let's hit the next verse, the next paragraph there.
Okay. Let us see what basic information we should know that relate to the people of color, but we were never told. What continent and or land masses held the formation of Judaism and Christianity? Europe, Asia, the Americas, Africa, the land of Ham, the land of Cush, or the land of Kemet?
What is it, folks?
Who?
It's a question.
Or the land. Oh, you're asking us now, huh? Oh, the continent and the land of Ham? They held the formation would have been
foundation. Should be foundation.
Uh-huh.
Formation.
The land of Kemet. Or Cush. Well, Ham, Cush, and Kemet. Africa is the same, isn't it?
Ham, Cush, and Kemet.
Okay. Yeah. So wouldn't all those be
those are all scriptures, yes.
Uh huh.
Sure wasn't Europe. Not
it wasn't
ages,
Europe,
not
Asia,
the
or the Americas.
Mm-mm.
No.
Okay, good.
So
good.
Ham, Cush, and Kemet.
All right, now you can continue.
Okay. The rise of Western civil culture during the 16th century caused most books, relics, icons, and other religious artifacts in support of Africa's contribution to the formation of Judaism and Christianity to be either destroyed or placed in dungeons throughout Europe and parts of Asia. It was chiefly since the Elba, Syria findings in 1959 that the recovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls that scholarly interest was awakened to document and research the many biblical truths relating to historical Africa and the Holy Bible. One major interest has been to replace and to restore the historical and biblical Christ of Nazareth with the one who was given to the Western world by Rome or the Pope.
Mm-hmm. That's a very serious quote there.
Mm-hmm.
Of what was going on. All right, it's 9:52. Let's take a get back at 5 and close out our last session. We'll pick up from there.
Come back at 5? Okay.
Yeah, I guess it's 4 your time. I mean, depending on what hour.
No, 4 Betty's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 4 my time. Okay.
Okay. Glad everybody came back for part 3. Okay, as we have read in the last paragraph under preface is it's a good section here. It starts off with the 16th century. Now, does everyone know when the 16th century is?
During the 16th
century. Yeah.
Okay, what year is it? Are we talking?
In the 1500s.
The 1500s, that is correct. Mm-hmm. That's when the Western world made everything disappear.
Right.
The books, the relics.
The icons, yeah.
Artifacts, everything that proved without a shadow of a doubt Africans' contribution to the formation of Judaism and Christianity. Judaism and Christianity could not exist without Africa. Another way that it's put in this book, another book, it's put that when a person looks in the Bible, you cannot tell. Let me think about that again. Okay, okay. Somebody has something out there. If they can hit *6.
Well. I don't think it's me.
I don't.
You sure it's not you, dear?
No, I'm sitting right here. Nope. Mm-mm. So is somebody moving some plates and stuff like that? So it sounds like our mysterious person who has not identified themselves yet. That's
okay.
Who it is. That's obvious. That's just none
of
us.
I'm sitting right in front of this computer here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
okay.
I've been since we got on, so.
Okay. So what we are finding out is that that the Bible can only be understood in light of Egypt. That's the way it's put. That when you're inside of the Bible, that you can't see is like you being in a house with all the windows shut. Egypt is the window to the Bible, so that you can see the landscape. Egypt.
What did you say was the window to the Bible?
Egypt.
That's what I thought.
Right, that you can see the landscape. You can't understand the Bible outside the context of Egypt.
Okay.
Of Africa. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we found out that when we go back and we look at the Garden of Eden, we found the four rivers that they talked about three civilizations. What were they?
Mm-hmm.
And where were they located?
In Egypt.
No, the first river.
Well, in Africa, but they were leading out into different
parts. Right, okay, but where's the first one? Where's the first one?
A python.
Mm-mm. Yep, the python, which surrounded the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold, and the gold of that land is good. There is delium and the onyx stone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where was that located?
The python?
Mm-hmm. Since we don't have a river. Since we don't have a river called Python today, and since we don't have a land called Havilah today because of the renaming, what is the name of today?
The name of today, isn't that
easy? The African Great Lake.
It can't be easy because that's the other one.
The African
Great
Lake.
Great Lake.
Mm-hmm. That's where the first river came from. The second river, which is called Gihon, which surrounds the whole land of Cush or Ethiopia. What river is that?
Oh, they call it.
We call it the Nile today. The White Nile, Blue Nile, that combine together and move up the Nile and dump off into the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm-hmm.
The Nile Valley civilization was the second civilization. And then we have the third and fourth rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris. And they surrounded the whole land of what? the land of what we called, that they call back then, the land of Nimrod, the Bible calls it.
Asia?
Nimrod.
Bible calls it the land of Nimrod.
Right, okay.
Now, according to European historian, we do not reference it like that, for they do not want anything that relates to African have any meaning in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's why they renamed it the Middle East.
Hmm.
And that's the place where Nimrod built Nineveh, Halkir, and Calak, and Ramah. And we find out that also that's where the land of Shinar was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we remember correctly, that the name they renamed the land of Shinar, the land of Chaldea.
Mm-hmm.
And who came from Ur of the Chaldees?
Abraham.
Uh-huh. So we see that all of this stuff is all tied back into the Cushites or the Nubian people.
Mm-hmm.
So to erase all of that, that's why when you read the King James, you won't find the word Cush, which means burnt-faced people. You'll find the word Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of finding the word Kemet, you're going to find the word Egypt.
Okay,
which we talked about before. Mm-hmm. So here, they remove every trace that shows that the formation of Judaism is Africa. The formation of Christianity, the first Christian nation, was Cush. See? They, all of that is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they said that either destroyed or placed in dungeons throughout Europe and parts of Asia. So it's not in Africa. I think about today when we're talking about the Libyans, and they're talking about how Muammar Gaddafi is killing them off and all of that stuff, what's going on up there.
Yeah.
And we're trying to protect them. Then I started thinking, all of them people that we're looking at, none of them are African. They're all Arabs.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Egypt today is run and is all what? Arabs. So the Arabs are revolting. And they're trying to make Africa as an Arab nation, as if that's our religion.
Ah, mm-hmm.
When there's not even none of them light-skinned people are African. They don't follow the ancients, nor do they even understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But most people are missing the point. And so that's why I said it's in Asia and in Europe. So some of these places, you know, they keep it in hiding it because the colonialist Arabs are doing the same thing as the colonialist British and Americans do, to keep everything under check. So what is this telling you? What was happening in the 1500s?
Well, it appears, with this bit of information now, that they, it appears then that what they are trying to make us believe is that we have really made no contributions to this world at all.
Mm-hmm.
That it was strictly a Western standpoint, and that the religion didn't come so much out of Egypt as it did from Europe or the European mindset. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I'm thinking now that if this then, did they have a religion in Africa? I mean, in Egypt? And what was that religion then if we're being told that it was not, if Judaism and Christianity came out of it, what was the original religion?
And it certainly wasn't Islamic. Okay.
No, that came on the scene later.
Mm-hmm. It was so busy destroying
and removing during that time, that we're having to scramble around and see what it was, how we were supposed to have true worship in spirit and truth.
Yes, how it was actually happening in the past.
Yeah.
Now, this is the most interesting part. I'm glad you brought that up and made that focused in on that, because in the beginning, when Adam and Eve were created, they were created from the dust of the ground, and it talks about the gold in the land and so forth. Nubia means the land of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the original names for the original people that were in Nubia means taken from the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Adam was taken from the dirt, then there it is right there. It's explaining it to you. There's nobody that got no Richard's history that goes back that far. And that the Nubians were the first to create the concept of worshiping Yahweh through Adam and Eve. So yes, anything and everything that has basically come from the planet has come from these groups of people who are now told, as you said, never did anything. But their formation, see, they didn't get rid of the pieces of the religion because they knew that they needed to keep parts of it. But all they needed to do was mask it, which is what they did. So that's why they took away anything that formed it of where these religions came from are gone, as if they came of themselves.
So now this begs the question then. We don't go back to those ancient gods that they worship, like Ra and Ra and Osiris and Horus and.
Okay, so your understanding is that Egypt was polytheist or monotheist?
Polytheist.
Okay.
That's the that's from the history we're given of them anyway.
Okay, then you read the father of Egyptology, a white dude. His name is Champollion. He says that the Egyptian religion is monotheist. The first monotheist religion. I mean, not one of the first, because it came after the Nubians. But the Europeans had us interpret it to mean polytheist.
I'm thinking about when Abraham went into Egypt, and the king there, when the angel appeared to him, well, no, not the angel, when Yahweh himself appeared to him, he said, would you, what does it say, would you condemn a righteous nation?
Yes,
yeah.
Genesis chapter 20. Without slay a righteous nation.
Slay a righteous nation, right. And so we know there that he was, that it was, one.
And this was prior to Abraham.
Because
you can't have a righteous nation when one guy is on the stage. But we're never told to think like that. Even when we think about Moses, who did Moses marry?
Zipporah.
Right, and who was Zipporah's dad?
The priest of Midian?
That's right. An Ethiopian priest.
Right.
So are you telling me that Moses is falling for a heathen?
No,
he falls for what? A worshiper of Elohim. But not just a worshiper of Elohim, the priest's daughter.
Priest's daughter.
The top notch, the highest you can go to worship in Yahweh. We don't hear, when we come to the time of Joseph, who did Joseph marry?
Pharaoh's daughter. The Pharaoh's somebody related to Pharaoh's daughter.
No, he never married anything with Pharaoh's daughter.
It was some person that worked for Pharaoh, his daughter.
It was the priest of On's daughter.
Yeah, but he was something in Pharaoh's...
He was the priest of On.
Mm.
He was the priest of Egypt.
Ah.
The priest of On.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So is he? Has he gone apostate too?
No. Mm-mm.
So how come Yahweh's faithful people are marrying priests' daughters? Not the average Joe Blow.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are closest to their God.
Oh, gosh, have we been this deceived, Father? Hmm.
Yeah.
And we're saying that these people are heathen. As you just said, that they're polytheists. They worship all these gods.
Mm-hmm.
That what Joseph said?
Mm-hmm. He didn't say that. But then Western world by Rome did.
West, and that's the whole catch. Well, remember.
In that Bible of King James 16.
Okay, but no. Look at this. Look at this, which you just read up there. The Western world in the 1500s, what did they do? They hid everything that relates to Africa's contribution.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So when you read the Bible, you're not supposed to see, even though it says it in clear words,
mm-hmm.
that his people married priests' daughters. That whenever there was trouble, they went into Africa, not Europe. All the obvious stuff you're never supposed to see. And it's been sitting there.
We obviously didn't.
But that's the key. That's how they operate. I mean, that's how the operation is. And that's why I let us read this. Because anything that contributes to us is gone. That's why they don't call the Middle East the land of Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too close to Cush. It's his son.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we look at Nimrod as an evil person
mm-hmm.
because they told us to, that he created all his heathen religions. I'm saying, wait a minute, how could he?
But now that's not true?
How? Okay, let's think about it. Let's backtrack just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible says that Nimrod was a mighty hunter before
Yahweh.
Before
Yahweh. Mm-hmm.
Okay, in some Bibles, that word hunter is hero. Was a mighty hero before Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
How does that have to do with anything that says that he was against Yahweh?
Whoa. Now, that doesn't. It doesn't in itself. No, it doesn't.
That's the scripture. And you know what they say? They said that scripture means, because in my book I explain it, they say that scripture means that against, that word that he was a mighty hunter before, or a mighty
mm-hmm.
hero before, that means he was against. Before
mm-hmm.
means against
mm-hmm.
Yahweh. And I said, okay, well, let's backtrack that thought then. If you're going to say that that word means that there, then what does it mean when Bible says that Abraham walked before me and be thou perfect?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to say that now it means walk contrary to me?
Now you're cold.
You see that word? It's the same word.
Mm-hmm,
so they took the word before and tried to use it in reference to and reference to Nimrod as against. But then I say, let's look at that same word. Then we have to apply it to Abraham as against.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no. Well, then you can't do the other. But you weren't supposed to see that. That's what they call hand waving. Or some might call it white magic.
Oh. Hmm.
Okay, back to our
so
quote here.
So we've given poor Cush, Nimrod, a bad rap then.
Wait. Let's backtrack that. It says what? Any artifacts or any support of African contributions. Anything that you read in the Bible that says anything in reference to Africa or black is always in the context of what? Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything in the Bible that's good about black people?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So, of course, Nimrod would have to be. Everybody has to be. Egypt has to be.
Mm-hmm.
even everything that we've said.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm glad you concentrated on that part of that particular quote, because in there it makes it crystal clear. That's what I wanted to make sure people got. Now, this is what happened in the 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found out that after 1959, now what was going on in the 1950s?
Specifically?
What was going on in Africa or America?
America.
Oh, wow.
You might have to help us there to give us a clue what it is you're focusing on.
Well, remember, if y'all all see the eyes on the prize?
It was like the 60s, and before that, we had been fighting for
Do y'all remember eyes on the prize?
Right.
I don't.
Okay, yeah, you need to see that. You need to see that series. Yes, you need to see the series. It helped you understand what in the world we went through to get to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
On the Eyes on the Prize, it opens in 1954.
Right.
These white males killed this black young guy.
Mega Evers.
No, not Mega Evers. Mega Evers was a little later. It was a little boy. He was 12 years old.
Little boy?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And they killed him, and they threw... And then drowned him in the water and shot him and burned him with cigarette butts. And that's what caused the start of the civil rights after that. So right around this time, the civil rights was brewing in America when this was being found to bring us back to who we are.
Oh.
This was the time in 1959, this was the awakening for the documentation of the Bible, the historical Africa, and the Holy Bible.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in turmoil in America.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major interests was to reclaim the biblical Messiah versus the European one given to us from the Western world.
There it is.
And when we see the movie, when you see the movie, The Ten Commandments, who's the king of Egypt? King of Africa, basically. I guess that's what they're trying to portray. Yul Brynner. Yul Brynner. Who's Moses?
Oh, Yul Brynner. Oh, my God.
Who's Moses? Hudson. So they made everything white. And so from there, everybody believed it. And that's where we are. Now, notice what when I'm explaining that, notice what it says, the next paragraph. Go read this one slow.
Okay. Betty, you want to read?
During the 1500s?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. During the 1500s, 16th century, which is the 16th century, immediately after the last Moor, which is a black African, was defeated in Europe in 1492, at the beginning of the 1500s, the authorized, what's that?
Sanctioned
scholars waste no time in removing all traces of the black African presence in the formation of Judaism and Christianity.
Okay, so we see here, that's how that quote started. In the 1500s, immediately after the Black Moor. Now, most people don't know who Moors are. The Moors are Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And they ruled from 700 to 17, so 1492, parts of Europe. And that history has been demolished.
Expunged from the records, my mind.
Then, remember, the Europeans went into the Dark Ages. Is that right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever asked, how did they get out?
Okay.
That's how they got out. The Moors brought them more science, brought them sanitation, brought them three meals a day, brought them showers, brought them how to live. Libraries, education, mathematics.
And that's when they wasted no time in removing all traces, right?
For the 700 years. Yes, because 700, around 700 A.D., that's when they came in.
Okay.
And they ruled Spain and Portugal. And right after that, right around the 1450-something, during the Spanish Inquisition, that they said that that's when the Pope vowed that all black people would be slaves perpetually.
Mm.
Because they knew who they were. So they had to do the cover-up. So they said we would be slaves, and at the same time they're hiding all documentation of who we are, all documentation that we ruled Spain and Europe, all documentation that we brought them out of the Dark Ages into the marvelous light.
So did they rewrite?
They just wrote.
And
we could only read what?
What they wrote. Mm-hmm.
Similar to
so when they wrote in the historical Yeshua, who did they give us?
A non-historical Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you had Michelangelo to portray his cousin and his sister.
Yeah, Serapis.
As mom and dad.
Mm.
So these are the things that you had. And so that's what that chapter was saying up above, that that place well quote. But most people don't know anything about the Moors.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the ones that ruled for that time frame. So as we can see that they removed all traces of black presence.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything referred to in the Bible as black, it's evil. Like you said, Nimrod created the religion of Lucifer.
Hmm.
That's what we were taught. Egypt worships many gods. Anything black. And black
people. So what then becomes
be cursed.
Okay. Now when we get to the Passover story and they are delivered from Egypt, how are we to interpret that story now?
You remind me at another time we'll go over that. What was happening in Egypt? What was happening in Egypt? Europeans and Asians would always come down and conquer the northern part of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was different parts of rulers, but they still called them Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the, just like today. We call the Europeans what? Americans. When they
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, the Bible says that the time came when the people who was running Egypt did not know who?
Joseph. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you were African, how could you forget Joseph? You couldn't. That meant that another race of people had come and conquered that part of Egypt and
mm-hmm.
never knew who Joseph was.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they can throw them into slavery.
My goodness.
That's what I'm saying. We just totally don't understand any of the context. That's why you mm-hmm. can't understand the Bible outside of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't black Africans. These were Asians, just the same ones that are up there today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So then, this might take us a bit off, or maybe not, but then, so how did Jerusalem, Mount Carmel, and all these places in what we call now the Middle East, how did that become the place of salvation as opposed to Egypt? Again, the same story?
Well, when you talk about, first of all, we don't know any clues about what's happening in Egypt. Now, when you go down and you read in the book of Revelation, and you read about the city.
Mm-hmm.
It says there'll be, what, 144,000
mm-hmm.
squares
mm-hmm.
in all directions. When
right.
you map that out
mm-hmm.
into those different areas, guess what's included? I think this city goes all the way down into Ethiopia area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not left out.
Uh-huh.
Okay, plus if you've been reading my book, it's been telling you that in Nubia was the first place down the Great Lakes. That's where the first civilization Egypt or the Nile Valley became an extension or a colony of Nubia.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, then when they went over to what we call the Middle East or what we call today the land of Nimrod,
mm-hmm.
Nimrod, that was his son. So that's nothing but an extension of what? Of Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you're talking about that area, yes, that was nothing but an extension from the Africans, nothing more.
So it could well be included and still not be unscriptural
recognize. It was because that's where they came from. It was. Remember, that was a colony. That's why you would find out that that's many of the kings would make leagues with the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm. Always calling on Egypt for help.
Well,
true.
Then they can't be the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, the Bible makes it crystal clear, I think, in the first five books, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, never that the Hebrews were never to hate the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
Make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're your number one enemy, that scripture should not be there.
Boy, are we ever going to get all this straight? Mm. So much unlearning to do.
Yes, that's why the younger people will learn it much easier than us and see it much easier than us.
Well, because they
haven't been brainwashed.
We get them young.
Right, because we have to be, we have to be uneducated before we become truly educated.
Uh-huh,
where they
uh-huh.
get it the first time, true education.
They got it.
They
don't have
it.
To unlearn anything. They could just know it like we know this erroneous history.
There you go. That's exactly how
dear.
It works. That's how it works.
My.
Okay, let's get back to our reading there.
Okay. Where did we leave off?
You just read one sentence.
Okay. After 100 years of destroying, removing, and renaming all evidence of the Black African formation of Judaism and Christianity, then this laid the foundation for what would happen a century later in the 17th century. This is the 1600s.
That's freeze right there. That's freeze right there. Did you understand what that said?
About the destroying and removing?
Yeah, that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
For how long?
100 years. So we're talking about the 17th century now.
That's right. You can do a lot in 100 years.
Yes, you can.
The people who were running there for 700 years, the Moors, is put out, and in 100 years, they had turned
everything
into
everything was destroyed and removed. Mm.
No, they became demonic. They demonicized them. Let me give you a good example. That's the reason why I was asking you, what did you believe about the trumpets and seals?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Uriah Smith teaches in his book, Daniel and Revelation, which a lot of people believe, he teaches that when the trumpets are blown and the one that comes out, that there's locusts come out.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the locust is the Moors.
Okay.
Are you serious? See, it's been a long time since I picked up his book because I kind of pulled away from it a little bit, but the thinking is still there.
What was the name of his book?
Daniel in Revelation.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's by Uriah Smith. And so in there, what they were teaching was that, and I even had people who have approached me and said, hey, man, when the Moors, man, that the Bible had to kick the Moors out of Europe because that was a Christian nation, and they were following the devil.
Mm.
I'm saying, no, it's the exact opposite. We're the ones who brought them out of the Dark Ages. We didn't put them in the Dark Ages.
Right.
And then they overpowered the Moors, apparently.
Yeah,
it would
be over 700 years. Yeah, they were able to eventually kick them out because they was only in Spain and in Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also during that particular time frame, so that's what I was saying, they had 100 years to rewrite history and put themselves in. Now, when you read the book Josephus, everybody familiar with Josephus?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, he writes in his book, he says that the Greeks are a that they teach amalgamation of history, and they put themselves in the history where they were never at.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And so this is why you can see this 100 years, they can rewash everything, and everything that saved them out of the dark ages has now become evil.
They become the savior and we become the villain.
There you go. Now, we're back to the Uriah Smith thing. When they talk about, and that's what they were talking about, when they come out with like locusts and stuff, that these are the, what we call the Moors. So basically what they did was, that there was a Moor, Victoria, I think it's Victor. He was a Moor, but he's a saint by the Catholic Church.
Mm.
Maurice.
But they don't
the
show
saint.
Him as
Maurice.
A black man, do they?
No, they show him as a black man.
Oh, they do? Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that means that all Moors, Moor only meant black. But they try
mm-hmm.
to tell you more meant Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
When we can see as clear as day all throughout North Africa, them guys who are running who are Muslim, ain't none of them black.
Mm-hmm.
In Iraq, Iran.
Mm-mm.
Those are not black folk. Those are not Africans.
Mm.
More just meant black. That means you could be a, it doesn't had nothing to do with your religion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they were trying to make it into a race war. That was a race war, such
mm-hmm.
that they can get all the people to line up against the
Goodbye.
Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll happen again. That's why I said when the beast and you're in the belly of the beast and so forth, that when they're finished messing with the
Mexicans
and making them look bad, then the next people they're coming after is us. Same thing.
They're going to come back to us. They already was doing a mighty fine job before the Mexicans.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. So right now, they didn't have the Mexicans before. All people of color, that's what they go after when things
mm-hmm.
get tight. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so in here, as we can see, the 100 years was 100 years of brainwashing folk. Such that they can enslave the same people who freed them.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's what the slave trade was all about.
Because you know what? That's another pattern I'm seeing in history. Remember, it was Joseph actually that freed Egypt. Because if he had not gone down with the spirit and power of Yah, with that dream of the plenty with the kine and the
seven-year plague.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And had prepared those granaries to feed the world, basically, as they knew it then. He was the savior. He became a great man because of it. And
mm-hmm.
then they turned right around and enslaved the very people who had freed them.
Yeah.
Right. But
it was
remember,
Joseph
this
as
is,
an Israelite. But then
so
they...
Who's enslaving them?
Who's enslaving who? Oh, the Egyptian. Well, I guess it would have been then the conquerors, the Europeans that had taken over at that point.
Yeah, the
Asians
that had taken
Asians.
Over.
Asians, yeah.
Right, and the same ones that are taking over when? Today.
Mm-hmm.
The same ones who are taking over today.
Mm-hmm.
There are no Libyans nor Egyptians in Libya or Egypt.
That's right.
All of them are Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
The same way it was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Until the Africans were able to kick them out again.
Mm-hmm.
Who did?
That's where it was always back and forth in the ancient world, in Egypt. Everybody would come down to Egypt, and then they would take over, and then the Africans that are further south would have to come up there and kick them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it worked. But that's why. But if you don't know Egyptian history, you don't know. You keep thinking that these white boys who are in Egypt now are the true Egyptians.
Never done.
Mm-hmm.
And that Libyans are the true Libyans.
Mm-hmm.
And that Africa is an Arab nation. No,
right.
We're not. No, man. We are the ones who create. Everyone gets their religion from us. and recreate it.
And I'm hearing now that we gave them Yah. So, oh, man, this thing is so backwards. We have gotten history so wrong.
No, it's his story. You keep missing it. He never said it was true history. He said it's his story.
His story.
Yeah, I know.
We got his story all right.
We bought into a hook, line, and sinker for sure.
Because that's all part of it. Now, remember, now once you remove history, now this is where we are. Once you remove history for 100 years, what happens to these people? That's what you was about to read. Let me let you read it and see what happens.
Okay.
Hit the after 100 years. Start from there.
After 100 years. Then this land?
After 100 years. Start with that sentence.
Okay. After 100 years of destroying, removing, and renaming all evidence of the Black African formation of Judaism and Christianity, then this laid the foundation for what would happen a century later in the 17th century, which is the 1600s. One, the authorized King James Version of the Bible in 1611 and 1612, the official use of propaganda in 1622.
Okay, let's freeze right there. Those are the two things that happened after 100 years of destroying and removing all Black presence. The official authorized, sanctioned scholars output their book called the Authorized King James Version of the Bible. Why did you put out an authorized? Why didn't you just put out a regular King James? Because you wanted to let everyone know this is the acceptable reading and interpretation. That's what made it authorized. And at the same time, they said in 1622 that they were using propaganda officially by the church on the people. That's where the word propaganda comes from, the propagation of the faith. The question here should be asked, whose faith?
Ay, ay, ay.
And so that's what missionaries, and that's what we do. We propagate their faith. That's what's called propaganda. They're just nothing but propagandists. And we do a good job.
Yep, got to give them credit for that. He certainly got us roped in.
Okay, y'all understand what happened from the 1500s and 1600s.
Yes.
Now you're ready. Okay, you can finish reading there.
Okay. I hope we can see that basic information about the Bible and the origin of Judaism and Christianity have been consciously removed from our memory and hidden from us. The people who are hiding it from us are our religious leaders and the government in America, Europe, in Asia.
Now, why do we say that?
Because it is.
Well, because who hid the books?
Them. They did.
We read
course.
It earlier, right? In Asia, in Europe, yeah. That's where they're hiding it.
That's right.
I mean, we're not trying to make up something. This was from the quote earlier. We're trying to explain that quote. That's above.
Absolutely.
Now, remember, it said that they removed it out of our memory banks. So when we came here to America, they whipped us out of our language,
right,
out of our religion, and out of everything that we've ever knew.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some places say that they had an underground Hebrew religion going all the way through from slavery. And there's one or two churches that exist, they say, in Baltimore that show.
Wow.
It had to be the underground church, yes. And they kept it. So this is what we're talking about. So this is not something that we're making up. There is evidence. And that's the reason why, you remember, you could rape, you could kill, You can massacre, you can lynch, you can burn a black people, but there was one thing that was forbidden. You remember what that was?
Mm.
Teaching a black person how to read.
How to read, uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
Right. Why? Because once they read the Exodus, they would know that they were the Hebrews.
We
let
are the
let my people go. And when what's his name? Turner?
Nat Turner.
Yep, when Nat Turner read that in the Bible, that was his rolling call.
Mm.
Bible says, let my people go. That's what happened. So they saw the Bible as their history.
It was smarter than us.
Until we were taught that. Well, most people, a lot of people believe that a lot of the slaves that were being sold from one tribe to the next, they were not the normal Africans. They were the Hebrews. So that Deuteronomy chapter 28 could be fulfilled.
Yeah.
As we see it today, as we were being lynched, as we were being in chains, as we would be at the bottom, as we would, you know, be in the cities, and how we would fear for our lives. This is exactly what is happening today.
And we wouldn't be able to sell our agriculture. They wouldn't even buy them. That's what it said that too. I was amazed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, and he says that, you know, the our enemy will come to us, and they would scatter us in 10 different or 100 different directions.
Yeah.
We would come as one, and then we would disperse. That's called the civil rights movement, when they put the dogs on us and they hit us with those water holes.
Yeah,
I mean, this all the stuff is right there listed in the Bible.
It is.
It's just that we don't have eyes to see. And ears to hear. Which was prophesied.
Our group was just reading 28 and 29 and seeing it wholly different the way is being brought out today.
Mm-hmm.
We did see that.
But now, Father had said that he would scatter us because of disobedience, and somehow or the other, we must have turned from him and his ways and went seeking after these European ways, and that's why he was able to step back and let this happen to us, because we had forsaken him, the father of our covenant.
Yeah.
So we have a part in the role that we played in it too.
Well, we
always
got
allowed it to
happen. We always got a role. It's always because of our disobedience that anything happens to us.
Exactly. So the way to get back, if my people will humble themselves and pray and seek my face, then he would heal our land and restore us. So that's the process, I guess, that we're working through right now.
You got it. If we bring sustainability, we got it.
Mm-hmm.
He will heal the land.
Heal the land.
Yes. I mean, this stuff is real.
It's real, brother. Ooh, it's so real.
Most
it's unbelievable.
Don't have no clue what's going on.
Mm-mm.
All right, you can finish reading there.
Other basic information is documented in the Bible and this book series. As an example, most people believe that the Old Testament was written in Hebrew, but most do not know that Hebrew is a dialect and not a language.
And how about that? Did y'all know that?
Oh, we learned it a couple of weeks ago. So we shouldn't waste any time learning Hebrew now then?
You can if you have the time for it, but the catch is still going to be, I mean, the key is the obvious stuff that we can read in English we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So if we could first master one thing, we could get somewhere. So that he can show us. He's not going to deny us from not showing it to us.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But yes, all knowledge is good and profitable.
Mm.
Okay, so yes. Okay, next line.
So what language is Hebrew a dialect of? Another way to phrase the question is, what language was the Old Testament truly written in? European, Asian, English, Canaanite, or African? What continent?
Now, what's the answer? Don't run from the answer.
Canaanite. Isn't Canaanite African too?
Yep.
Why was it separate?
African Canaanite. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because Africans are the sons of Ham.
That's right.
And Canaan was what? One of the sons of Ham.
Mm-hmm.
What continent or land masses were the first two rivers that left the Garden of Eden located? Europe, Asia, the Americas, Middle East, Mesopotamia, Africa, the land of Ham, the land of Cush, the land of Nimrod, or the land of Shinar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the land of Nimrod and Shinar are the same, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the river ran out. You said the first two rivers?
Mm-hmm. Not all four, just two.
Yes, the
two. Yep, the first two are most important,
mm-hmm.
which are ignored 100%.
The land of Nimrod and the land of Shinar.
Nope.
No?
Mm-mm. First, you got to tell me what were the first two rivers. That's how you'll know.
Gihon and Pison.
Oh, I know the names of them, but
I thought y'all were studying that through their map.
The whole land of Ethiopia, which they call what?
Well, that would be the Nile River. We surround the land of Ethiopia. That's the blue and white Nile. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's the second river. Now, what's the first river? Y'all got to get those down. This is the most important parts. That's the what we call the Great Lake regions of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the Great Lakes area.
Mm-hmm.
Is where the first river came from. The second one flows out of it. That's the Nile, straight out of it, clear.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Great Lakes, okay.
Yep.
Because
I think we covered that in one of our sessions, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We did.
Yeah.
Yep, I know it's hard to get that one down, but we got to get them down. Because those are the civilizations that the whole world has run off of,
mm-hmm.
from religion to science to mathematics, everything.
So of which one did it run out of?
The Great Lakes.
But that's not listed.
Say that again. Under the Great Lakes, the Nile Valley, the Nile River, the white and blue Nile comes out of, is a contribution of many of the Great Lakes.
Also, it would be Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in the heart and horn of Africa, they call it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But now I'm looking here in the book. Am I missing something? It doesn't call it the Great Lakes.
Right. Because I'm asking where were the locations, not was the name of them.
Oh.
I asked what landmass.
Uh-huh.
And continent. Mm-hmm.
Great Lakes region. Okay.
Right. Most people think it's Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
The East, Middle East, that's what everybody thinks. But the third river, the third and fourth rivers over there, the last two, not the
mm-hmm.
first two.
Oh, okay.
That's Assyria. Okay.
Yep, so it's just Africa, the land of Ham.
Oh, I see the horn.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what. Okay. All right.
Okay, you can continue reading.
Now I hope you can see that the church and state really do not have people of color interests at heart. This disturbed me greatly, and I became conscious of this one fact, that there appears to be a conscious conspiracy against people of color. With this awakening of consciousness, I started to search to see if these things were true. To my amazement, I was uncovering things that were truly disturbing and startling. These facts are presented in this book to awaken us out of our sleep. Mm. I am not trying to attack anyone. I'm just presenting facts that affect the way one thinks. In fact, it is a sequel of slavery. It has been made possible by our system of miseducating innocent people who did not know what was happening. It is so subtle that men have participated in promoting it without knowing what they were doing.
Sounds like us.
Two, this is a self-perpetuating system of control.
Well, before you read any more, did we get that?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yep, these are disturbing facts.
It is.
And the question is, how do they continue to do it and we not be able to see it? It's because we promote it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so subtle that that we don't need the master to tell us to do it anymore. We
and not more,
promote
right.
it ourselves.
We do it ourselves to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's where the education system comes in.
Mm-hmm.
They train you to they train you to reteach or to teach only their story.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you couldn't even teach in their schools if you're not going to teach it their way.
That's right. And still today.
Well, some people can get away with it, like I do.
Mm-hmm.
I teach sustainability. I teach all this stuff up in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Get my young students, you know, all fired up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in a high school?
No, I teach college.
Oh, that's what I thought. You can have a little bit more liberty there.
Yeah, well, I'm a scientist. They
right.
can't show me that my science is wrong.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my...
Go ahead.
Yeah, you got their curriculum. In my curriculum,
right.
we have our curriculum of we have to teach true science, period. As an engineer. So that means we can blend it to help it see so that they can see the true picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, so this is where we find ourselves. We read this last paragraph and we'll pick up the next week.
Okay.
This is a self-perpetuating system of control that has hijacked true education and replaced it with miseducation.
And what
they
does that say?
Hmm.
And what does that line say? Because that's the same thing as slavery, sequel
yeah.
to slavery.
And, well, when it's this self-perpetuating, each of us are just participating in it. As the above paragraphs say, some without even knowing it, we're just, you know, forcing our kids, you got to go to school, you know, you got to get an education. In fact, we slave away to make sure that they have the money to get that education.
As they would call it, a Christian
kill
education.
Themselves.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
To propagate more propaganda.
Mm-hmm. They use accreditation and our curriculum system to enslave people's minds.
There we go.
There you go.
And that's why we have to create our own curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And people will tell you, well, I won't send my kid to that school because it's not accredited.
I know. You don't know how I struggled with that when I was attending Oakwood College. Heard about some self-supporting schools that did not offer degrees and just couldn't see how I was going to function in a world where degrees were the end-all, be-all, and you don't have a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, I can look back and regret it, but... it was a struggle for me, but I opted to go on with the system that had the accreditation. But I almost left Oakwood to go to Think Wildwood to study self-supporting ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but they don't offer degrees. How am I going to ever get a job? I won't be able to work, you know?
And this is how I have been brought up, that you have to have that degree to do it.
That's right.
Hijacked our education. Hijacked true education and replace it with accreditation.
Yep. And if you know much about early Adventist history, that was the one thing that they fought against, that we should not join with the worldly systems, should not become accredited institutions.
Well,
and that
Amish
if we
and
did,
Mennonites still do that.
Hmm?
Amish and Mennonites still do that.
Don't have the accreditation, you mean?
There you go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I admire those people, boy.
Right,
they
so it wasn't
truth.
Just one group. It wasn't just Adventists. There's a whole bunch of people that were doing that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then everybody left them except the Amish and Mennonites. They're the only ones.
Isn't that something? If the people latch on to the truth, they've held on to so many of the old ways. It's absolutely beautiful to see how they're still surviving in a 20th century, almost 21st century world.
And nobody's, they surviving very well.
Very well indeed.
That's right. When everybody else is struggling, Yahweh's work plan always works.
Always work. Wow. Uh-huh. So this mental and spiritual slavery we find ourselves in today is equal to and sometimes something worse than the slavery of our forefathers a little less than 150 years ago.
That
this
right?
all became possible
that
under
true?
Our system of learning.
Is that
and
true?
Education,
hold it. Is that true?
Which is?
Yes, it is.
Huh?
Okay, how? How is it true?
Because the things that were happening in slavery with our foreparents, the things that we were provided with and for, it has intense even more. When providing food, when you mentioned before, providing food and shelter, they do the same thing, but now you don't have that ongoing until you, I mean, you could be a slave like that, our foreparents, until you die and get the same thing. And today they have offer you the food stamp and the Section 8. You can't, the government is such in such a way that you can't be on that until you die, but it's the same vicious cycle, only intensified, because it's drawing in more, and they don't even have to do it. We voluntarily go in and get on Section 8. Young people, older people, anyone, I mean, you know, in childbearing ages and what have you, I'm just targeting that particular example of being worse than our foreparents. And then we have the miseducation along with it. They had knowledge of what was going on and couldn't do anything about it. We have knowledge of what's going on and can do something about it. I'm not talking about to me that, because I didn't have the knowledge. But there's something about young people that's keeping them out of those churches and keeping them out of a lot of, even the education, they're dropping out of school. Why? It's not because they're just bad kids, and they do have their share. They see something, and yet they're not doing anything about it more intensely. And then they're miseducated in the sense of, I'm not going to work for those few dollars. I'm not going to unite my dollars with anybody. And most young people are lazy and don't want to have a job, and they'll make that excuse. So it's worse now than it was for our foreparents.
There you go. Through social engineering. That's been for 150 years now. That's all it's been. Three generations have passed by. No more.
And if he can keep them young people from working and put that mentality, keep driving that mentality, he can keep that Section 8 and them food stamps pushing. The Mexicans are going to find a rude awakening. They have fire buggies to our young black people, too. They're pushing fire for one family, one family of blacks who are pushing only two of them food stamp buggies. They're in for a rude awakening.
Because it's all going to crash, yeah.
Tell you,
right. Finish reading.
Okay. This all became possible under our system of learning and education, which is in reality the miseducation of the masses through social engineering.
Do y'all know what social engineering is?
There it is. There it is.
How would you put social engineering in your own words?
Engineering, guiding us into a social, a way of living the way they have taught it from a European perspective. Our churches, our schools.
Well, social engineering.
Even into our marriages, even marriages are affected by this social engineering.
Yep, socially engineering people is that you create a system such that it's self-perpetuating.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to feed it anymore. Just you'll go to the schools, brainwash, and come back and we give it to the people. Brainwash them,
mm-hmm.
and propaganda. Just keep propagating the propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that you believe it.
Oh, and won't have it any other way.
That's right.
And that's where we find ourselves, socially
mm-hmm.
engineered. So that
so
means
mm-hmm.
to be socially engineered, it's a plan program.
Mm-hmm.
You somebody asked. That's why I said by before it's over, we'll know.
Mm-hmm.
We were saying, people asked, was this consciously doing it?
Mm-hmm.
To social engineer something, you got to be very conscious of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And are the people knowing what's doing? Well, we also read that it's so subtle that we participate and promote it
without
ever knowing
it.
What we're
mm-hmm.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
So those questions you asked, they're all here.
Yep, sure are.
Mm-hmm.
So it trains yeah. innocent people to get degrees and those who do not really know what it is happening to them until it is too late. It is so subtle and imperceptible that we participate in promoting this social engineering without even knowing what we are doing. After receiving so many degrees in education, we hate to hear and find out that we are part of the problem innocently. Most are not conscious enough to figure out how to get out of this present-day dilemma.
See, that's the key. That's the key, because most
mm-hmm.
people are getting taking liberal art classes.
Mm-hmm.
Not science. They're not learning anything about science, which is supposed to draw you closer to Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, that's where the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And most of the people that you said that don't want to do nothing, none of them are scientists nor love mathematics, which
mm-hmm.
we created.
Mm-hmm.
The Africans created science and mathematics, not the Europeans.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
And we should not be afraid of it. Most of us are afraid of it.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's true. We steer clear of those areas.
And unfortunately, like you say, you end up in those liberal art degrees that really don't take you anywhere. But
well,
if you remember,
when you
yeah.
learn science and mathematics, you have to analyze. You have to put one and one together. You have to put things together. When you
mm-hmm.
do it the other way, all you're doing is regurgitating.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
right.
You never are taught ever to think, ever.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
With the other one, you have to think.
Mm-hmm.
Makes two different types of people.
My. So this book is designed to introduce present truth for our time and to help us in our present-day dilemma. We have been called by Yah to be watchmen on the walls of Zion.
Amen. Walls. That's Ezekiel 33.
So thou, O son of man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore, thou shalt hear the word at my mouth and warn them from me.
And that's important, because he says
mm-hmm.
that I will set you as a watchman.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that you're going to hear my words.
Right. From his mouth.
But if you're not his watchman, who you're socially engineering the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't hear what he says because he's not talking to you. But there is a voice out there.
So are we to encourage our kids to get degrees then?
In what?
Based on this?
In science or in liberal arts? Yeah.
Science and liberal arts?
Or
liberal arts.
Which one should you get them in?
Science, of course.
Thank you. Not liberal arts. Liberal arts is exactly what it says. It's so liberal you don't learn nothing. You just,
you
do is repeat after me.
Regurgitate. Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. But the other one, you have to think. And then you learn what Yahweh has made, and you can live in his creation and do not be scared of it.
I'm scared.
And then you can learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's there for.
Mm-hmm. This has been eye-opening, I can tell you.
Amen. We're glad that y'all could enjoy it.
Ooh, enjoyed it immensely. I mean, it's kind of a hot stirring, but, you know, we have to be awakened. And I think anytime you're changing, there's always that tug to stay put, you know, because you're comfortable there. But I want to be shaken out of my comfort zone so I can get on the right path to freedom.
Yep. Now, most people never read the preface and intro, and they're missing all this good stuff.
Well, I did, but I surely didn't get all this out of it.
That's what Bobby tells me. Oh, Emmanuel, man. No, man, Emmanuel, you got to go line by line. You be putting too much stuff in there, boy.
But no, it's been very eye-opening, and I did read this. I was all up into the chapters. Now I better start again.
Oh, yeah. That's what they say. As you reread the book, one person, my brother-in-law said, he's an African. He got his degree in African history. He says, man, when we read your book is like a reference book. We want to find something out. We go to your book and search it out from there, that perspective.
Wow.
So that's what we're trying to do. Awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to deal with, the dead bones in the valley.
That's right. Can these dry bones live, Emmanuel?
They're going to have to.
Okay. That's what
we get that mighty army going.
Yes, indeed. Let the King of Glory in. Strong and mighty. Mighty in battle. How can we lose with the stuff he used?
Brother, we really thank you for